This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Summer's here, and Nordstrom has everything you need for your best dress season ever. From beach days and weddings to weekend getaways and your everyday wardrobe. Discover stylish options under $100 from tons of your favorite brands like Mango, Skims, Princess Polly, and Madewell. It's easy, too, with free shipping and free returns, in-store order pickup, and more. Shop today in-stores, online at Nordstrom.com, or download the Nordstrom app.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
We're going to go back in time.
So then let's talk about the fit of Rodgers and the Steelers, Jerry. How is Rodgers a fit?
Rich, I really don't think he is.
From the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Rodgers, he's going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. And to that I say, awesome.
Today's guests, ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis, Steelers Radio Network host Jerry Dulac, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer, and now, it's Rich Eisen.
That's right. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We're live in Los Angeles, California. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial right here on the Roku Sports Channel, Infinity Sports Network. We say hello to everybody out there that's listening to us on Sirius XM or Odyssey or later on all 3 hours of our podcast. No Contest Wrestling is going to have their latest edition of Such Overreaction. Monday is going to be a segment right in the middle of this show. It's a centerpiece, if you will. Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is going to be zooming in to talk about the Aaron Rodgers arrival in Pittsburgh. He'll be zooming in from Oakmont. He'll be zooming in from the media tent at the United States Open. So that's be a fun conversation. Albert Breer in hour number three on everything going on in the NFL. Jay Billis about to join us to talk about last night's game two, the equalizer in the NBA Finals between Oklahoma City and Indiana, and also to talk about this new $2.8 billion settlement that's gone down in the NCAA. What does it mean? Apparently now schools can pay athletes directly, and anybody that was performing in college athletics from 2016 on is going to get retroactive NIL money. There's a lot to talk about in what is a changing landscape for college athletics, which definitely does affect Olympics athletics and athletes. So Jay's going to join us shortly. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Good to see you over there, Chris Brockman. Good to see you, sir.
Hey, Rich, great to see you. For today's show, can you just picture me wearing the Wally green mask and doing this all the time? Can you just do that for the whole show today?
Goodness gracious. The Red Sox did take care of the Yankees in a three-game set to get within 8.5 games of the division leader. That's good for you.
Has the Steinbrenner family officially transferred ownership to Rafael Devers? Okay. How's that work?
Good to see you over there, Jay. How are you?
Hey, what's up,
Jay
Rich?
Jay Felly is sitting in his chair. TJ Jefferson, candles lit over there? Or you're just lit because your battery or your car is dead?
See, why are you
having a morning?
You've been having a morning. I was going to let it go, and then now
you're just fired.
You know, but we talk about what's going on in our personal lives.
And then you never would have known.
But this is going to be, this 3 hour is going to be a sanctuary for you.
Woosah.
Like many of us here in Los Angeles.
If they're retroactively paying these people, then Reggie Bush is, he's going to need
there's a reason why,
truck.
Well, we'll talk about this later. There's a reason why I think he got his Heisman back, and many reasons why he got his Heisman back.
Trying to defer some of those payments.
But I'll tell you what, though. It looks like there's a bunch of people buying in Heisman House. Because they're going to get some retroactive play. And I think we have a list of those players.
Yeah, we were running through
we'll
some of the draft classes.
It's really a fascinating conversation. And oh, by the way, the Stanley Cup final is just awesome. It's just so much fun. Regular standard overtime, then double overtime. Edmonton wins game one. Florida wins game two. And that series between the conference champions from last year as well in the Stanley Cup Finals. He even won a piece. So final part. Pardon me, yeah, singular. The NBA Finals is...
As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Sorry, I missed the moment.
Jay, I'm page turning. I'm page turning, Jay. We're all tied at one game apiece in the NBA Finals as the Oklahoma City Thunder dominated in Game 2. This thing wasn't even close. Pacers got it to about 13, maybe a dozen points at some point in the second half. You thought maybe they'll be able to pull it off, but no. No. 123-107 was the final. This thing, it wasn't even that close. Really wasn't even that close. It was a tough watch if you were looking for competitive basketball. The 68-win team that blew the second half of Game 1 definitely took care of business last night, showed up. Another remarkable performance for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 34 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. He now has 72 points in his first two games in the NBA Finals. Is that a new record? Did that set a new record?
It did. For a man with a hard G and a soft G in his name, it set all the records.
It set all the records past Allen Iverson for the most points in the first two games of an NBA Finals career. Chet Holmgren showed up. The rest of the supporting cast showed up. And what now showed up? Is the Indiana Pacers going back home in a playoff series in these playoffs? It is remarkable. Got to tell you, it is remarkable. They're going into Game 3 of a series for the first time in these playoffs. One game apiece. They took a 2-0 lead on the Bucks. They shocked Cleveland by taking the first two in Cleveland, and that was the Halliburton night in Game 2 where it looked like it was going to be one game apiece, and Tyrese took care of business. Church bells rang at the very end of that game to take a 2-0 lead back to Indiana, and that was all she wrote. Stunned everybody in Cleveland. In the Eastern Conference Finals, we all saw what happened in Game 1, a Tyrese Halliburton shot at the end of regulation to force overtime, despite being down a ton of points late in the game. They beat the Knicks in Game 1. The Knicks had a hangover in Game 2. They lost that one. Indiana eventually took care of business in 6. Last night, Oklahoma City's like, the battle is now joined in a way that Indiana has not had a battle joined yet. So we shall see how it responds, how the Pacers do respond. In the meantime, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander talking about setting that record for the most points in the history of the NBA Finals by somebody's first two cracks at it.
I'm being myself. I don't think I tried to reinvent the wheel or step up to the plate with a different mindset. Just try to attack the game the right way, and I think I've done a pretty good job of that so far. I would trade the points for two W's for sure, but this is where our feet are, this is where we are, and you can't go back in the past, you can only try to make the future better, so that's what I'm focused on.
Yeah, wearing a John Lennon t-shirt underneath a dress shirt, SGA, imagining what can happen now that they're going back to Indiana, and this guy is unstoppable right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And has caused the Indiana Pacers head coach to, either be brutally honest.
Just resign to the fact.
Resign to the fact or work in the refs. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
You interpret this soundbite, please.
Shai, you can mark down 34 points before they even get on the plane tomorrow, for the next game. I mean, the guy's going to score. We gotta find ways to make it as tough as possible on him. Williams played really well tonight. All their guys played well, and so we're gonna have to do a lot of things better.
Maybe that's a message to his locker room.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, he didn't specifically mention free throws, but
Well, he was in a mood.
He was. Well.
Listen to this exchange with Rick Carlisle.
Curious, you talk a lot about disposition and physicality. How do you feel like your team handled that? Because it's obviously the Thunder seem to ramp up their intensity much more.
Not well.
Okay.
So there's that.
Bum, bum, okay. Bum, 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 bum.
Listen, I don't think this is any, I shouldn't preface things this way, but I will here. I don't think this is anything terribly insightful, what I'm about to say. The NBA season comes down to a 72-hour period starting Wednesday. It goes Wednesday, Friday. We're not waiting 2 days in between games like we did between games one and two and games two and three. Game three is Wednesday night. Game four is Friday night. We get ourselves a split, and they go back to the city of wearing all blue shirts. It was blue shirts, all blue shirts last night. Yep. If they gain a split in the city where they're all wearing gold shirts, yellow shirts, this is going to be a tough one for Indiana to come away with another win in Oklahoma City. I would proffer to say, hold court if you can. Win your home games.
Yep.
Have a parade. That's the way it works. And if they go back and take both at home and take a 3-1 lead back to Oklahoma City, meaning it's all about game six then, we got ourselves a shot for Indiana. But the way I saw it last night, Oklahoma City has obviously what it takes to win one Wednesday or Friday night. And this is it. Indiana, you got your big, huge game one stunner. But
they did what they had to do.
They did what they had to do. They got a piece. Now they got a hold serve. They hold serve. Off they go. We're going to see a parade, you know, in Indiana.
Well, they're not taking two at home, I don't think.
We shall see. We shall see. It's going to be fun. That's for sure. Wednesday night. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial on the program. Aaron Rodgers is in Western Pennsylvania. He is in Western Pennsylvania. He has put pen to paper, according to Albert Breer, who will be joining us in hour number three. One-year deal, $13.85 million. 10 of it guaranteed, $5.85 in incentives. Look at this guy.
Here, coach.
There he is. Aaron putting pen to paper, smiling. Is that a wedding ring on his left hand? That's another conversation. Who knows?
Ooh, I totally missed that.
Who knows? Because this man has been taking care of business, he has said, over the last 2 months. Albert Breer again joining us in hour number three, saying in his MMQB today, he has been in lockstep with the Steelers since March.
Yeah, so we didn't know.
Since March.
They played us, Chris.
Remember when he showed up in Pittsburgh for like a day? Albert says they snuck him in a back gate where construction workers were bringing dirt and sod for something that they're redoing their field there. And they told him, just come in the back way so nobody notices. And he drove himself.
Did he rent
a car?
Oh, yeah. He rented a Malibu.
He rented a car?
Nondescript.
He didn't want to be found out.
He saw Russ's I'm taking commercial from Newark Airport and raised him with, I'll rent myself a car. Drive myself to Pittsburgh. Like, again, everything you think about Aaron Rodgers, he'll just show up and say, I did the exact opposite, and then blame it all on the media for overblowing it.
That's a good way to endear yourself to those fans, too.
Brother, I'm going to tell you, the way you endear yourself to those fans is you show up, you work hard, and he's already doing that. He's already doing that. Apparently, he's in that playbook right now with Arthur Smith. They're digging in. And, you know, I don't know. This is the jet. I honestly don't know. I think it's going to work out. I have a feeling like the guy that we saw in December last year might have turned a physical corner. I don't know. Guy turns 42 years of age on the 2nd of December in between weeks 13 and 14 of this campaign. Week 13 is a home date against Buffalo on November 30th. 2 days later, he turns 42. And then a few days after that, at Baltimore for the first of two games against the Ravens, both of them in the month of December. Oh, my goodness. That's the Pittsburgh Steelers schedule. Actually, that's not true. The second one is the first week of January and the last weekend of the season. So will he hold up? What's the record going to be in week 13? Because you look at that schedule, it is deep and full of teams that he knows intimately well, including week one against the Jets. And it is a dirt cheap contract for somebody that does have neck up, Hall of Fame, all world, sixth sense, football savant ability. Imagine all of that football acumen in between those temples for $14 million a year, 10 guaranteed. Certainly when you've got the other option, because Russ was already out the door, apparently. The other option is somebody like Justin Fields, $20 million a year, still learning some NFL ropes. Yep. And that's the whole point, is that you've got, hopefully, in their mind, the ability of an all-world veteran. You know, say what you will about Russ. Obviously, he's got that neck-up ability, but Rodgers, I think, is on a different level. And hopefully for the Steelers, somebody with the physical attributes to play the position, to make it through an 18-week regular season, 17 games, the crucible of that, and then be ready for a playoff run in what does appear to be the last run. Rodgers said he would come inexpensively. He told that to Pat. And he was a man of his word, putting a pen to paper on that contract. And he's going to be there for this mandatory minicamp. And he is not leaving the Steelers in the lurch. The Steelers did wait, did have a long time waiting for him. But he's showing he's there. And he's speaking on Tuesday. Just reiterating one more time. You look at that schedule, and he faces the NFC North again. He's got the Packers in his house. He's got the Vikings in Ireland. He's got the Lions in his house. And he goes and visits Chicago. Good Lord. All of the division games in one of the toughest divisions in football. A reunion right off the bat with the Jets. There's the DK Metcalf reunion game in week two. A visit to Harbaugh's house out here in Southern California.
That's six playoff teams from last year.
There is a romp through the AFC East in full, including that game against Buffalo, his last game, if healthy, in the NFL as a 41-year-old. He turns 42 between that game and the first of two games against the Ravens. Come on. Two against Burrow. It's all locked in. And him locking in on that contract takes the question if he's going to show up out the window. That's now gone. Will we be talking about in week one? Oh, man, he should have been there in April. He should have been there in May. Of course not. This is now no longer fodder for discussion. Now it's about what can he do with this team? How quickly can they get up to speed? Will he be healthy? Is he going to be like the guy that played for the Jets in the final month of the season? Is he going to be the guy that can actually show up and be the Rodgers of old in a way that he never was for those 2 years for the Jets? Is this his Vikings in the Favre career path of Hall of Famer with the Packers, show up with the Jets, thoroughly disappoint with results, then go to one other spot, threaten to make the Super Bowl? Is that what's going to happen? Can't wait. Front row seat, popcorn ready. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We have set up this program. When we come back, Jay Billis on what happened in the first two games of the NBA Finals. And what in the world does this new settlement with the NCAA and athletics mean for everyone? That's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. With rising housing prices and steeper mortgage rates, we know home ownership may seem too expensive to be achievable, but that's why we offer a home buyer's choice loan that can open the door to affordable home ownership. Our home buyer's choice loan has no down payment options available, which means you don't need to wait years to save money. And with our no refi rate drop, you may be able to lower your rate in the future without refinancing. Plus, while most lenders require borrowers to purchase private mortgage insurance unless they can make a 20% down payment, we don't require PMI. Finally, we offer fixed payments, so your monthly payment will always be the same. So if you're looking for your first home or your next home, you can open the door with a Navy Federal Home Buyer's Choice Loan. Visit NavyFederal.org to learn how you can achieve home ownership. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility requirements. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Let's talk about coffee, people. If you're like me, your day cannot begin until you've had your first cup. Whether you're gearing up for back-to-back meetings, shuttling kids back and forth to activities, tackling an endless to-do list, your morning sets the tone for it all, and the perfect cup of coffee sets that tone, crafted just for you. Enter Trade. Trade is my number one U.S. coffee destination, bringing you fresh coffee from over 50 of the country's top roasters. Trade's experts have taste-tested thousands of coffees to curate over 450 amazing roasts. Just take their quiz, and under a minute, they'll match you with your perfect coffee. If that first bag isn't quite right, Trade will replace it for free until they nail it. And if you're headed out on summer vacation with Trade's subscription flexibility, you can pause or shift delivery while you're away and resume when you're home, ensuring you'll come home to great coffee, iced coffee too. So, right now, Trade is exclusively offering our listeners 50% off your one-month trial at drinktrade.com/Eisen. That's drinktrade, TRADE.com/Eisen for 50% off your one-month trial. drinktrade.com/Eisen. Back here on the show, Jay Billis is going to join us in just a couple minutes' time, and then we'll have a chit-chat with him.
Rich.
I know what you said at the top of the program.
Which part?
Do you really, though, in all seriousness?
Yes.
You as a hard-bitten New Englander. You're from all over.
I
wouldn't call you softened.
I've softened a little bit.
Do you really like or think it's cool that they put a Muppet head on the Boston Red Sox?
It's the mascot, Wally the Green Monster.
But putting Wally, you know, a mascot anyway, like a mascot. Like a mascot.
It's cool with it.
You think it's fun. It's great.
I do.
So if another team did it, you would have no problem with it, right?
Every team does it except your stupid team. It doesn't like to have fun whatsoever.
No, that's not true. That's not true. By the way, I find that very funny since you rooted for the team that supposedly had no fun for quite some time.
A winning is very fun.
I know that.
Like yesterday and Friday.
Exactly. Well, you lost Friday. You mean Saturday and Sunday.
Whatever days that we won, those were fun.
He's locked in, this guy.
Yeah.
He's locked in.
It's cute to hear you two argue over which team is better.
What hat do you guys put on when you hit a home run? You put on a hat.
We don't do hats, B.
Hey.
You know what I mean?
B doesn't do hats.
Am I
B?
You're B.
I'm B.
Well, they haven't won a World Series in 30 years. Okay. So.
Right. So what?
This guy.
Have some more fun.
Oh, really? So we weren't the guy who brought out the team that brought out Grimace and had
you
fun.
You hated that last year.
Exactly, because he's got respect for himself.
I defy you. I defy you to find one clip where I say
that's
I hated
absurd.
Grimace.
What is not fun? Like, everyone's literally smiling and laughing.
That's right, because somebody just hit a home run.
Do you believe this? I had a Grimace doll here before that even happened.
So you hated the Hawk Tua thing.
Yeah, that I hated.
Well,
that,
listen.
Yeah, don't get it twisted.
We're about to be joined by a man that once famously sued Grimace.
That's right.
Barney.
Oh, I get it.
I'm mixing up my purple.
Your purple dinosaurs or whatever. Yeah.
I'm confused. Let's bring in Jay Billis of ESPN to explain a lot to us. Good to see you, Jay. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. All right, let's bring order to this court, sir. But what happened with the NCAA and this settlement, $2.8 billion that now goes to previous athletes as a back pay for NIL and now a new pool of money created to pay athletes directly from school to athlete? I'm kind of a blank slate here, so please have the floor on it, Jay. What happened here?
Yeah, this is it's called the House case. So it's an antitrust case. And the plaintiffs, NCAA athletes, over the past, I think it is 8 or 9 years, basically from 2016 to 2024, was the class for back damages. They sued the NCAA under an antitrust theory that the NCAA schools colluded together in restraint of trade to restrict what athletes could earn or accept in the marketplace. And that was going to put the NCAA, if they lost that case, and I think they would have lost it, and most legal observers would agree with that, that would put them in the range of $4 or $5 billion in damages. So the NCAA settled the case with the House plaintiffs. So you're correct. $2.8 billion are going to be paid in back damages to former NCAA athletes during that time period. And then also there's going to be a component of revenue sharing in the future for NCAA athletes. This is all under what is a 10-year injunction that is going, and the court in the Ninth Circuit and Judge Claudia Wilkin are going to keep jurisdiction of this matter. So if things come up over the course of time, the court can pass on those issues. There's a place for people to go when they have issues with the settlement, if at all. But that time frame is going to give the NCAA time to adjust and try to figure things out. And by that, I mean they can enter into a collective bargaining agreement with the players. What I think is probably more likely that the NCAA is going to try to do over this time period is they're going to go to Congress and say, look, you told us to get our act together. We settled this case. Now make this settlement into law. I think that's going to be the next step in the NCAA's lobbying efforts with Congress. But under the settlement, Rich, so you have the $2.8 billion that's going to former players. Then you've got revenue sharing, and it's going to be 22% of television revenue, ticket revenue, sponsorship revenue calculated through the Power Five as an average. That's going to be about $20.5 million to start per school. Now, the schools don't have to pay their athletes that money, but they're allowed to up to that $20.5 million annual amount. There is an escalator clause of 4% per year for the first for years 2 and 3. And then after that, the revenue amount is going to be recalculated. So if you take all the expenses that athletes have been getting, whether it's scholarships, food, things like that, and add the revenue share amount, the NCAA believes that's going to get athletes to around 50% of overall revenue that's going to come their way. Mm. There's also going to be a new entity, a new commission that's going to oversee compliance of the revenue cap. And when has that not worked out great for the NCAA?
So, boy, do I have a lot of follow-up questions. Let's take it one at a time here. The $2.8 billion that's going to be given out to athletes that have been participating in sports over the since 2016, whose money is that? And who decides who gets what out of the $2.8 billion, Jay?
It's all detailed in the settlement. So it'll be members that opted into the class. There have been certain players, certain athletes during that time period, 600 of them about, that said, I don't want to be a part of the class. I want to have available my own action against the NCAA. So that was not a huge number relative to the amount of athletes that opted in. I don't know exactly how much it's going to be for each athlete. They're certainly going to be showing. I mean, you can opt in and maybe you wouldn't have received anything because you didn't have any great value. You know, you might have been on a roster but didn't have a great value that you could have commanded in the marketplace. So certainly it's going to be based upon, there are going to be issues that it's based upon your actual value. But that's all hashed out in the settlement. But $2.8 billion is a pretty big number for the NCAA to pay out. And it's a pretty big admission that they've been violating federal antitrust law for a long time.
So they have $2.8 billion sitting around, the NCAA?
They've been preparing for this. Yeah, the NCAA has been preparing for this for quite some time. They knew, I mean, this case has been going on for a while. The settlement's been in place for a while. It just got approved. The court finally approved it.
Right.
So now they can move forward and implement it and start paying athletes and sign. The biggest, I think, thing for me in this is now schools can sign players to contracts. So when you sign a player to a multi-year contract with this $20.5 million amount annually that's going to keep going up because revenues keep going up, in those arm's length negotiations, you can also put buyouts in those contracts. And when you put a buyout in, these players aren't going to go anywhere. They're not going to pay that. It may be a few players that might be able to maneuver, but there are going to be fewer places where you can transfer, and then it's going to cost you money to transfer. And if another school pays your buyout, that's going to count against their cap. So it's going to make it restrictive once athletes sign a contract. Now, if you want to go to school and not sign a contract, you can still move around like you want to now. But I think you're going to see schools signing their players to contracts, and that's going to give them a lot more stability in the sports that really matter to them.
Well, then that's where collective bargaining's got to come in. That's where unionizing is going to come in. That's where professionalizing is going to come in, and we're clearly on that path. Does this mean NILs? I mean, does this mean collectives and things like that go away, or schools can continue to do that? Like, again, Ohio State, we can go down the list of SEC schools, my school, Michigan. I'm sure in the case of your alma mater, certainly on the basketball front, Duke, do these collectives now just add on to the 25.5? So there will actually be haves and have nots. It's not like a level we're all under one salary cap playing field, Jay?
Well, the answer is yes and no to that. So there will still be third-party NIL. And there will be no limit to that NIL, except that any contract for NIL, for your name, image, and likeness in the marketplace, is going to be subject to review by Deloitte for fair market value. So let me just make up something. If there's a local car dealership in Ann Arbor,
yes,
that wants to pay the third string quarterback $4 million a year to do commercials for a local car dealership that grosses only $1 million per year, Deloitte's likely to say that's not a fair market value deal. That's a circumvention deal that is pay for play and not a fair market deal for name, image, and likeness. So if Deloitte dings that deal and says, nope, not fair market, there can be arbitration that's going to be quickly settled, and it's binding arbitration over that particular dispute. But really what this will do is say, all right, are these market-based deals that make sense in the marketplace and aren't just a way to circumvent the cap and you know, just pay for play, essentially, in addition to the revenue sharing? So I think it'll streamline things a little bit. There'll still be some deals here or there that might raise your eyebrows, but it won't be – I think it'll be a little bit more orderly. The difficulty is going to be in this new commission with enforcement. It is, by theory, going to be centralized and move quicker. But how many times have we heard that in the past with regard to NCAA enforcement?
Man, Jay, what does this mean for Olympic sports, Jay? Because I can already imagine $20.5 million, right? There are some schools that get that, and that can make up for a massive shortfall in budgets, right? But are they mandated this money must go to players, or they're able to just take it and throw it at the bottom line, like, say, some Major League Baseball owners do, instead of making sure they get enough players to compete with the haves? They just say, screw it, we're gonna take this money and throw it at our bottom line rather than give it to players. Is that possible that we're gonna see?
This is not a mandate that schools have to share their revenue. It's allowing them to share it. Oh. So no school has to give any player a nickel if they don't want to. They can allocate it basically now however they want. So if they want to allocate all $20.5 million to football, they can do that. And it's a fair question. How many sports are schools going to have? But I've always asked this question, how many should they have? You know, when you and I were in school, there were a lot fewer sports than there are now. Like schools now have 29 sports played on the varsity level. The SEC, I believe, has 18. So is the SEC shortchanging their athletes when the Ivy League isn't? I don't know the right answer to that. What we will see going forward are challenges with regard to Title IX and employment, because the old model of amateurism and all that stuff and a multi-billion dollar entertainment industry, that's dead. So there is a key question as to how many sports will schools decide they want to have. And I think that's going to be a school by school, conference by conference issue. But what I believe to be the case is schools are going to have however many sports benefit them. And one of the things that happens with athletes in the quote unquote non-revenue or Olympic sports is they retain students. These athletes want to compete. And so they don't move around quite as much as the athletes in the revenue producing sports, at least as of late. So if Cal Berkeley, which years ago tried to do this, they tried to eliminate their baseball program, the university community rose up and said, nope, we're not doing this. And they found the money and they kept it. And I think you're going to see that pretty much across the board. And one last thing on the Olympic thing.
Please.
The Olympic sports, I've heard administrators over the years say, boy, we start paying athletes, it's going to really hurt the United States Olympic movement, because college sports is the breeding ground for our Olympic athletes and Olympic movement. And I'm going, oh, so now the college athletes got to pay for our Olympic movement too? They have to remain unpaid so we can win medals? If we really care about our Olympic movement, the government should deal with that. Not college athletes. And I don't see coaches anywhere taking a discount so we can win more medals, or facilities not being built so we can win more medals. We got to get out of this idea that the players have to take a discount so we can do all these other things. Those days are over.
Yeah. I mean, I was literally about to say, this sounds like the feds need to get involved. You know what I mean? And which is obviously rife with its own issues, ripped straight from the headlines, right? It sounds like the NCAA is outsourcing their oversight, their compliance. They're outsourcing the, I guess, accounting, right? I mean, Deloitte is now going to figure out whether something's cap compliant in college athletics. So the question is, I guess, is who's going to get together and say, we're just going to create our own world with a commissioner and a union and players, and go for it? And does Congress really need to be the one to bang these heads together, Jay? Because I don't know if that'll ever happen, you know?
At some point, that may happen, Rich. I mean, this is just my belief that as long as this money train is going smoothly down the tracks, Congress doesn't have any incentive to get involved. And one thing that I've learned over the last several years is, you know, Congress doesn't want to take this on and sort of have the federal government doing, you know, running college sports. By the same token, they don't want to give the NCAA a law that takes them out of antitrust scrutiny and then at the same time allow them to oversee their own shop, like the fox in charge of the hen house type of deal. So one of the issues that would get Congress involved, in my view, is if there is a major disruption to college sports. If you saw the Power Four conferences break off and start their own thing, maybe Congress might say, hey, wait a minute, we got constituents that are smaller schools that this is going to affect. That could happen. But because things have been, for the most part, pretty orderly, and every check is clearing, you know, ratings are up, there's been no game canceled because of any of these issues, Congress hasn't really had the incentive to get involved. But what I do believe is going to happen, or at least going to be the NCAA's strategy here, is Congress has basically told them in so many words, get your house in order before we get involved. And I think the NCAA is looking at this settlement saying, all right, now we have our house in order. So make this into law. Give us a law that codifies this settlement and gives us some cover so we're not getting sued every 5 minutes. My personal belief is,
yes,
if you don't want to get sued, stop breaking the law. You know, let's start there. You're breaking the law all the time. Stop doing that. And to me, the easiest way to do that is, like, all these schools are market competitors against one another. So you guys do whatever you want, pay whomever you want, however much you want, and we'll go from there. Then we don't have any antitrust problems. All the antitrust problems go away. But they've never had the will to do that. And I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon anyway.
Well, listen, Jay, it just sounds to me that there will just be more haves and more have-nots. And at some point, the haves are all going to get together. It's what it sounds like to me. I mean,
maybe, but to that point, we've always had haves and have-nots. And paying athletes now allows the former have-nots access to better talent than they have ever had.
Mm.
So I think it spreads talent out more than it concentrates it. Because people think it is, some people out there think that there was an equitable system before NIL. And the answer was there wasn't. And I think you may recall a few years ago, Nick Saban was saying, well, we don't have the same amount of money as Texas A&M does. I mean, Alabama was complaining that they couldn't compete. So by paying players, Texas A&M could get as many good players as Alabama could get, which they couldn't get before, or at least felt like they couldn't get. So this actually spreads talent out more, and I think we're seeing that. But it's never going to make Ball State the same as Indiana. Like, that's not going to happen with this system, unless there's revenue sharing among the schools. But you're never going to see that. Like, the SEC is not going to share their, in the Big Ten, they're not sharing their money with anybody. That's not going to happen.
Before I let you go, Jay, your opinion of the first two games of the NBA Finals and how it could be a roadmap of how the final five, if necessary, games go?
I think the games have been great. The whole season's been great. But I think what game two showed you, you know, game one, Indiana had an amazing comeback. And similar to a couple of the comebacks they had maybe against the Knicks earlier where they were down, that's not a good recipe against Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City's defense is the real thing. I mean, I'd put that up with some of the great defenses in the history of the NBA. That's how good they are with their ball pressure, their rotations, their closeouts, their rim protection. They are legit. And the one thing I think if people didn't know it, and part of it is this big market thing, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a great superstar. We've been bandying about what does superstar mean. I don't know what it means, but I know it when I see it. And that dude is the real deal. He ain't going anywhere. He's going to be getting 30 in all these games.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Rick Carlisle sounded resigned after the game, saying he's going to get 34 before he gets on the plane. We got to do something about it. So you think Oklahoma City eventually takes it in, not to put words in your mouth, but what do you think?
I thought before the series, and I've been proven wrong in a couple of these things, that Oklahoma City would win it in six.
Okay.
But I mean, that this puts a tremendous amount of strain on Indiana to win their home games. I think if they can win these two at home, which is a big if, they're fully capable of doing that. But home court hasn't been the benefit this year in the NBA that I expected in the past. It's amazing how many times you're seeing this. Well, teams that were down this much in the fourth quarter were 0-1200. And you've seen that change this year. But it seems like home court advantage has not been what it was in the 90s, although the officiating has been what it was in the 90s. These games have been ultra physical. So I don't think anybody can complain that somehow physical defense is not being played, because it is. These games have been tremendous in that regard.
All right, Jay, you're the man. I'd love to have you back before the draft and then before the American Century Championship, sir, where I will be seeing you.
Looking forward to it already.
Very much so, Jay. Thanks for the time. You always make me smarter, man. Love our chats.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
The great Jay Billis here on the Rich Eisen Show. So much to take in right there, man. Even the safest drivers still encounter unsafe conditions, so it's important they do it in a safe vehicle. And Hyundai's offer available Class Executive Advanced Safety features to help keep you protected against the many challenges the road throws your way. Basically, in a Hyundai, you can drive as safely as possible and enjoy your journey in confidence and style. When you change lanes, signal check for traffic and enjoy the added safety of Hyundai's available blind spot view monitor. Constantly scan for dangers and take advantage of Hyundai's standard forward collision avoidance assist to help prevent accidents by alerting you of imminent collisions and automatically applying the brakes. Stay alert at all times and be thankful that Hyundai's standard driver attention warning system monitors your attention levels and can bring your focus back on the road. Safety is all about making the right decisions on the road and when selecting a vehicle. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for details.
The Hoover Dam wasn't built in a day, and the GMC Sierra lineup wasn't built overnight. Like every American achievement, building the Sierra 1500 heavy duty and EV was the result of dedication. A dedication to mastering the art of engineering. That's what this country has done for 250 years and what GMC has done for over 100. We are professional grade. Visit GMC.com to learn more. Assembled in Flint and Hamtramck, Michigan and Fort Wayne, Indiana of U.S. and globally sourced parts.
Were you a trial lawyer?
Yeah. I was a commercial litigator. So I like did trial
ladies work. And gentlemen of the jury, like you did that, you have opening statement, closing statement. Mm-hmm.
The one case that I had that was somewhat, it gained some notoriety was I represented a costume manufacturer against Barney the Purple Dinosaur. So the group that owned the rights to Barney went around, and they have to do this, called Lions Partnership. They were suing people who were infringing upon the image and likeness of Barney. And so if you don't, you know, protect your rights, you can lose them. So sure. It just kind of happens that way. So I was representing a guy named Philip Morris, who owned a Morris Costumes. And he described himself as the Colonel Sanders of the costume industry. They sold this thing called Hillary the Hippo, which looked exactly like Barney. And it was just being rented for people to do, parties for their kids and all that. So we wanted to settle the case right away, but they wouldn't settle it because they wanted to make an example out of it.
Oh, no.
So we went to federal court and won.
No kidding.
Yeah, we won. And we wound up, then it went to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. I had to argue about Barney the Purple Dinosaur one step away from the United States Supreme Court. The funniest part, and because the case is over, I could say this now.
Yes.
I had the costume, the evidence of the trial, I had the costume at home for some reason.
Yes.
And my wife and her friends used it to have a birthday party for some of our kids. For some of the kids in the neighborhood. And they had all, you know, this is back before cell phone pictures and all that. So sure. There are pictures of all this. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, do you realize this could end the trial right here if the other side got a hold of this?
Is that why it never made it to the Supreme Court?
No. Okay. No, we wound up, that never would have made it, period. But the fact that it made it to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals.
I would have loved it just to hear Jay Bellis. Justice Rehnquist, I ask you.
I subpoenaed Barney to the trial. Honest to God,
it gets better.
I subpoenaed Barney to the trial. The other side said, Your Honor, we can't do that. There are only three of these costumes in existence. It's on the road doing this, a hardship of bringing it in. And the costume is 6'8" tall, weighs like 250 pounds or whatever. And I stood up and I said, Your Honor, I'm 6'8" and I weigh about 240. I got in here just fine. And so the judge ordered the costume and they brought it, opened up this big truck, and they wouldn't let anybody see it unless somebody was in it. Barney pops out of the back of a truck onto the loading dock. The judge came down, all the court reporter, and every employee of the federal building was there to see it.
This is a celebrity, right?
It was the dumbest thing you'd ever seen in your life.
Oh my gosh. I haven't heard that story in a while. Laugh out loud.
So good. Love still that so story. Good. Right.
He brought Barney to the trial. Your Honor, I'm 6'5". What do you say, 240? Yeah. Is that what he said?
Hey, I'm almost 240.
Right? Dude, 6'8", 240. That's pretty good.
It's a big dog.
He looks good.
Stout.
I got here just fine. I order Barney's appearance. But they wouldn't let Barney be seen as a costume.
Right. And scare the kids.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Barney's real. Barney can throw out first pitches and change fortunes of baseball franchises. And turn towns into Mets towns.
Grimace.
That's Grimace.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, the other purple.
Oh, darn it.
No, we're signing.
I did it again.
Grimace is supposedly like a taste bud.
You keep trying to play me, and then you end up playing yourself.
Play myself. Hate the game. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, everybody. I got to be honest with you. I'm all for full, fair market, free trade, all that good stuff, right? Free agency. I'm all for it. But I'm hearing that now schools can just pay players. I don't have a problem with them paying players. I have a problem if sports go away because they're not getting the money.
Oh, gotcha.
Or schools go away because their money is the same as the big schools from this pool, but the big schools can then add on top with all sorts of stuff, NIL deals. But he's even saying right there, Jay, that this is going to be watched by a group of CPAs from Deloitte. So it's going to be always tax season at Deloitte, because this stuff's going to be going on 365, 24/7, 365 all the time, looking at these NIL contracts. Oh, okay. So, and that's my problem with this as well. In the same way I had no problem with NIL, I just had a problem with, like, we don't know what it means. And there's no construct set up to run things in a way that's fair, equitable, and transparent. And sure enough, years later, it's like, we got a problem. Well, somebody's NIL deals in this part of the country is different from that part of the country, and who's enforcing it?
Nobody.
And or there is, but some legislatures have this rule, some legislatures have that rule. And that's my concern with this, is just like, who's going to be in charge of it? They're now outsourcing stuff to CPAs, courts. I mean, really, this is going to work? I am genuinely concerned that this is just going to hit the market and nobody knows what the hell's going to happen. And I'm telling you, it's all going to come down to a bunch of schools that have the same issues economically, same issues, or same at least playing field sports wise. They're just going to say, why the hell are we going to be competing in this manner when we could just make up our own rules, have our own commissioner, have our own contracts, have our own stuff? Well, I'm going to let some CPA in Deloitte handle this. We'll have our own management council. We'll do a whole damn thing, and we're going to take our ball. We're going to go in somewhere else. Certainly, if other schools, smaller schools, like I was saying to you during a commercial break, just as for an example, what if Jim Mora at UConn can pay somebody $2 million more to come to stores to play football instead of going to Syracuse?
Right.
What happens then? And Jay Billis is like, that's great. UConn will be better. Okay. That's right.
Yeah, maybe Cam Ward, would he have stayed at Washington State maybe, instead of going to Miami now?
I don't know. Like, this is a total brave new world. Jerry Dulac on the Steelers and Aaron Rodgers coming up.
And is there going to be a tax for schools who go over their NIL allotment? You know, similar to like, maybe the NBA has
salary
apron.
Allotment.
Yeah, salary. That's what I mean.
I imagine it's a hard cap.
Yeah.
Imagine it's a hard cap.
And I'm sure everyone will abide by the hard cap.
And in terms of like, is a court now going to be in terms of like compliance with everything? Oh my God. There's like what? I don't know how many schools opted into this, but it's got to be in the hundreds.
Yeah. Just seems like there's more opportunity for rule skirting. Just like the old days.
My goodness. Oh, by the way, just like Khan in The Wrath of Khan. Remember The Wrath of Khan? Remember that?
Khan!
He was like dead pretty much on the bridge of his ship.
Spoiler alert.
Right? He was like he was out, but he was gonna spit his last breath at Captain Kirk. Admiral Kirk. Okay. Remember he's gonna spit his last breath knowing that he's a dead man. He's a dead man. On a ship.
The Wrath of Khan.
He was gonna spit his last breath at thee. That's what the NCAA is doing at Michigan right now. They just finished their two-day hearing on, yes, all the stuff that's been going on. This is the last basic compliance hearing the NCAA has under its current construct. That's what we got going on. So wait,
so it's all coming down on you.
I don't, because this thing's over. It's over. The NCAA is toast. I don't know what the hell they're going to do with themselves.
Ooh.
Add 20 million more teams to the NCAA basketball men's tournament? Is that what we're going to do now?
Stupidest idea.
Is that what we're doing? We're going to spit our last breath at the tournament too? Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is crazy.
68's not enough. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do 150.
Dumb.
Correct. So, I mean, I'm looking to have the NCAA dead and buried, but I'm concerned that there's no current construct to place this new system in and have it run efficiently where there's not more haves and there's more have-nots. Where there are more haves is what it looks like to me right now, don't you think?
Currently, but this is the whole idea behind this is to even up the haves and have-nots.
It's what he seems, Jay's just like, you know what? If you don't want to have this sort of stuff, stop breaking the law. And that's what they were doing, antitrust. Yeah. And now Mahomes is going to go to his mailbox and get some sort of NIL back pay and go, oh.
Right.
Oh, that's right. I did play in 2016.
That's a nice check.
Like Joe Burrow's going to go to the mailbox?
Yeah.
Hey. Oh.
Oh, hey.
Wow. Like that's a lot of zeros.
Yeah.
Oh, great. New wine room.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.